Would you want to be one of those weird cartoon ghosts, like a Slimer or a Casper, or just like yourself but see-through?
I think that if I'm going to be cursed for eternity to exist on this mortal plane long after my body has given up, and I will ultimately be captured and trapped in a little box, why not be one of those freaky little guys?
I want to be a freaky little, like, caricature of my current self.
Yeah.
Yeah, just like a really expressionist kind of, oh, how do you cut through to the absolute aura? I mean, to be honest, I'm pretty much just coming up with Slimer for me. That does pretty much Slimer.
Well, I was going to say, maybe yours would be like in an old-timey cinema usher uniform.
Oh, I like that. Only haunting people who talk during movies.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm actually up for this now. I just scare people who misbehave in cinemas.
Just smash the popcorn out of their hands.
Yeah.
Drag them to hell through the chairs.
Oh, and there's like one little kid who's always really respectful during cinema, and he's the only one who feels comfortable coming in the end. Oh, this is a movie, I think.
This is a movie. This is probably a better movie.
How about yours? What does your ghost do?
My ghost is just pale, thin and tired. Just the most
fuck yeah.
Haggard, exhausted. Yeah.
It's a really tired ghost. Just fucking trying to get through the day. Ooh. Welcome to One Good Thing, the podcast that is harmless unless you put it in your mouth and set it on fire. I'm Paul Gruberson, and I'm joined by the fantastic friend of the podcast, it's Sarah Keep.
Hello. Happy to be here.
Happy to have you. Hooray. Yes, and we are commemorating the release of the new Ghostbusters film, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, by reviewing the last time we were meaningfully asked who we were going to call, and the answer was heavily implied to be Ghostbusters. It's Ghostbusters Afterlife.
Yay.
Call it fate. Call it luck. Call it karma. I believe that everything happens for a reason. Come on, darling.
A gunner seat?
It seems like no one was interested in even making Ghostbusters 2. Even that early on, nobody really wanted to do this again. Especially Bill Murray. Bill Murray was not up for this. But Columbia was desperate for a hit after a string of failures in the late 80s, and so agreed to pay Bill Murray $10 million to appear in the second film, a demand that was then repeated by the rest of the cast. It is hilarious to bear that in mind when you watch just how few fucks Bill Murray gives away in Ghostbusters 2. It's hilarious. There's just like constant excuses for him not to get involved in what's going on. Like the bit where they all go into the sewer and fall into slime, he just goes for dinner instead.
Boy, I haven't seen Ghostbusters 2 in a very long time, so I guess
it's,
I just never acknowledged that sort of stuff when I was a kid. I was just like,
yeah,
the funny people made the goo dance or whatever.
They made the goo dance. But Ghostbusters 2 underperformed, much to Murray's potential delight. Industry experts blamed Batman and Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. The, you know, tough competition.
Yeah, Moranis cannibalizing, you know, that was... his own.
I know, right? Moranis on Moranis. Director Ivan Reitman felt that audiences were more cynical and negative, and that's why they didn't like his cash grab sequel that nobody wanted to make. They just haven't got the love in their heart anymore to believe in this thing I made for money. Dan Aykroyd still believed, though. That genuinely insane man.
Yeah, he believed in it as well as believing in aliens.
Yeah, aliens and a few other things. He started writing a script for the third one immediately after the second one, a script that was called Ghostbusters 3 Hellbent, which would see the team transported to hell to meet the devil. It seems like the writing process of all of these was just to talk Dan Aykroyd out of the terrible ideas he had.
And they failed. I mean, the
second one was meant to involve... Yeah, well, I mean, the original idea for Ghostbusters 2 involved, like, a tunnel that the Ghostbusters would get into, and it would have, like, an elevator that would go to the center of the Earth and take 3 days to get there. And they would just be in an elevator together for 3 days.
Ooh, boy.
He's an ideas man. A bad ideas man. anyway, it didn't happen, notably, and bits of the script ended up being used in the 2009 video game, which for a long time, I believe, fans were... treating as the sort of third movie by proxy. Murray was also not involved in any of this, disliking sequels. If I were to recount the number of times this movie got off the ground only to then immediately fall apart, we'd be here all day, but needless to say, it really galvanized everyone when the producers had the audacity to make one with girls in it. Somehow that just got everybody on board again and they agreed to get involved. Ugh. Consequently, finally, in 2019, it's announced that the film has gained an exciting new voice to guide this film to completion. The original director's son, Jason Reitman. Fresh perspective. It's Jason Reitman who directed Thank You for Smoking, Juno, Up in the Air, Young Adult, Labor Day, Men, Women and Children, Tully, and The Frontrunner. Also an executive producer of Whiplash, I realise.
Yes.
That's quite out of character. He writes the script with British-American filmmaker Gil Keenan, who directed Monster House and the Poltergeist remake. Oh boy. And he cites David Lynch as an influence.
Ah. Yeah. I know. Doesn't come through at all in his film.
Yeah. You can just say things are influences. Maybe Dune? Little bits of Dune. He, incidentally, is directing the new one. The film ignores the events of the 2016 film, but respectfully, you know. Reitman assures us, it's very respectful. He has nothing but respect for Paul Feig and that movie, but we are going to pretend it didn't happen.
Well, fine. That film was already technically like in a different universe because Bill Murray played a different character.
Yeah, maybe that was like a fever dream of Dan Aykroyd's character. Nevertheless, they all reassured us that they had tremendous respect for it. Here's a sentence, just taken straight from the Wikipedia. With a script centered around family, Reitman felt it was appropriate to change the backdrop from New York City to the American West. You can't do a family drama in New York. It's literally, literally impossible. The creature known as Muncher is similar to Slimer, Reitman explained. Something happened to Slimer over the years. The people started thinking of him as the Dalmatian of the firehouse. The original Slimer was an angry dude and very scary, and we wanted to get back to that. Oh, interesting. The creature designer, Bryn Metheny, said he wanted to make Muncher whom the audience can latch on to easily, giving him a universal appeal of being funny and cool and cute and weird in every way. It's a good coherent vision there.
Yep, a good coherent vision, and one that, again, spoilers, failed humongously.
What are you talking about? I found Muncher to be incredibly, what was it? Cool, funny and cool and cute and weird. He's so cool.
He's so cool.
I've got him on my lunchbox.
Everyone's favourite Josh Gad character, Muncher.
Oh, God, is that... Oh, God. Oh, Gad. Oh, I didn't finish the sentence. Critics reacted to the movie, like a reference to the first movie. They loved it. William Bibiani, writing for The Wrap, commented that Ghostbusters... Suffice to say... Oh, sorry, let me just try that again. William Bibiani at The Wrap said... Suffice to say, fans of the original, especially the ones who love finding Easter eggs, will probably be satisfied. Those who enjoyed the 1984 film and who actually wanted a new installment of Ghostbusters to offer something different instead of shamelessly pandering to pre-existing fans may be disappointed, but they can probably settle for Afterlife's slick and straightforward formulaic craftsmanship. What a thing to settle for. Yay, formula! Nom, 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 nom. I can digest this.
Yeah, eat your same film that you've always seen, children.
Eat your mush. Do you ever think that someone who's writing from the death of culture might not know that they're doing so? You just read it afterwards and it's like, oh, okay. Not too much brimstone in the air today. Oh, God. Well, we do have some three men. Josh Gad was in Pixels and Artemis Fowl. That's a bad, bad track record.
Yep.
Yeah. Devastatingly, though, McKenna Grace was also in Independence Day Resurgence and apparently Malignant.
Huh.
I don't remember her in Malignant.
Well, McKenna Grace basically plays every person but young, because she was Carol Danvers in Captain Marvel.
Course.
She was Sabrina in the Sabrina TV show. And she was the younger version of the person in The Haunting of Hill House. So she almost, she played a young Malignant in Malignant.
She actually genuinely, that's probably the place where she most makes sense. Oh my God, everyone can just tell she's going to grow into somebody one day. She's going to be a star. Speaking of going to be a star, J.K. Simmons was in The Snowman, Postal, and Jennifer's Body, apparently, although I don't remember that very well. But then again, I didn't really remember he was in this very well.
And, you know, Diablo Cody, there's a link there.
There's a link there. Olivia Wilde was in Life Itself, for shame. Don't Worry, Darling, and In Time, and is in apparently in this. I think I managed to guess just about who she is in this, so we'll come to that. And then, of course, you all know who he is in this. Dan Aykroyd was in Christmas with the Cranks, Pearl Harbor, Pixels, and Casper. Good Lord. Playing a Ghostbuster in Casper. So this is... Yeah, that's a very rare three-man to play the same character. Across multiple movies, but there you go. Ghostbusters Afterlife has a whopping 64% on Rotten Tomatoes, 45% on Metacritic, 7.1 on IMDb, 3.1 on Letterboxd, and made nearly three times its production budget, hence Frozen Kingdom or whatever it is. So Sarah, you Ivor Shandor, what's one thing about Ghostbusters Afterlife that made you want to inject yourself with the plague and try and find a cure in time? Because you were quite sure of wanting to do this one the last time you appeared on the podcast, which I'm staggered to discover was November 2022.
It was, yeah. I was surprised as well. I wasn't that surprised because until recently, my schedule has been a very early morning schedule.
True.
So it hasn't super linked up with your late night schedule.
But crazy Batman-esque activities.
Yeah, but now that I can do late nights, you're going to struggle to get me off the podcast.
Yee! I'm so happy to hear that. I mean, you are due for three appearances this year already, and we're only in March.
But I loved Ghostbusters as a kid so much. And I'm going to put it out there. I didn't hate Ghostbusters 2016 as much as a lot of people did.
No, there was no need to hate it as much as most people seem to hate Ghostbusters 2016.
I think that... Whether you liked that film or not really relied on how you felt about like Paul Feig films, and I thought it was fine. I had a good time in the cinema, and I felt like it at least was a little more original than what we got here, which just disappointment.
Yeah, no, I remember thinking, God, some of the references to the original are quite overt here in 2016. I didn't know what was coming. I did not know how far they could take this. No, my feeling towards 2016 was that it was a very enjoyable film, but it was very different from the original. The style of comedy was very different. It had moved from what felt like a very sort of tight kind of dialogue-driven comedy to a very improvisational, you know, kind of thing, which if you're on board with that kind of comedy, there's lots to enjoy. You know, the look and a lot of the performances are really fun. But yeah, then we get to Afterlife.
Yeah.
Which is the one the fans love.
Well, because really the most prevalent thing in Hollywood at the minute is just obsession with nostalgia.
Yes.
If you can, and it's like a little bit on their part that they don't want to take risks. So if they can be like, hey, remember this? You liked this once. Yeah. Well, now it's this again. Then they feel like they can.
But louder.
yeah, they're just printing money at that point, but I don't like that. I don't want just the thing, but again.
Yeah. I don't know when it happened, because I remember there was a thing when I was younger for what was at the time called soft reboots, you know, and they would say that of something like, well, you know, Batman Begins would be considered a reboot, and then something, oh God, I'm trying to think of an example now, like Scream 4 made fun of the idea of soft reboots. It was this idea that it's a sequel, but it's, you know, also a remake. It's like a mix between the two. And then I think it was The Force Awakens that then sort of cemented the idea of a legacy sequel. I know there were some before that, like Tron and a few others, but the idea of a belated sequel that is, you know, a sequel but made, you know, several decades later, and that kind of set the mold for what we're now living in, where most movies are that.
Yes, and Force Awakens was very definitively, hey, look, it's just A New Hope again, almost beat for beat, which is what this film is, but with Ghostbusters 1.
Yeah, this is definitely the Force Awakens of the Ghostbuster franchise. And let's have a little look here as to what happens in this here Ghostbusters, starting with Ghost Corps. Oh boy, there's a universe.
Oh, Sony, they can't be trusted.
I know, they can't. It sucks so much. I really hope this is canon with Madam Web. But they've already made good on at least delivering a second one, so it's not going to join the infamous movies, a delightful little treasure trove of movies that have a logo at the beginning for a shared universe, and they are the only installment. I'm thinking Tom Cruise's Mummy. I'm thinking M. Night Shyamalan's Devil.
Oh.
I can't think of any others, but
yes,
it's
but there's a few.
Devil...
And films with post-credit sequences that will go nowhere.
Yeah, that's a special treat as well. Remember Tim Blake Nelson, kids? He'll be back. He'll be back in the next Hulk movie.
Well, but, you know, as terrible as the MCU is, they are fulfilling that thing 20 years later in that he is going to be back in a new Captain America movie.
I didn't know that. That's ridiculous. Seriously. That's amazing. Oh, God. Well, nevertheless, yes, Ghost Corps. And the fan service immediately begins with the production logo and the old music. My notes are so sporadic. The next thing I say is about the fucking kid trying to get a job at the burger joint.
Okay, so here's like the first thing that's a little bit off. And it is our introduction to CGI Egon.
Yay! Even death won't save you from this franchise.
The irony of not letting the dead rest. Not lost on the filmmakers, I'm sure. But at least in these opening scenes, they do it in a way that feels at least a little bit respectful. Like, there's a lot of shadow on the face. You can't... A lot of stand-ins. Later on, at the end of the film, spoilers, we get a horrible CGI full-on Egon that's, like, hard to look at. But for
I
now...
I couldn't believe it when they did that. It's so audacious.
For now, at least, when they kill him off screen, you at least got to see his shadowy body for a little bit.
That's right, because he's being chased by some sort of ghost across the town, and he's driving his truck, and he tries to catch it, but the power fails, and so he gets got by the armchair from the fucking first movie, because I guess that's just a thing that Gozer likes doing. Spoiler alert, Gozer's back. Cut to a family.
We have a real ragtag group that we're introduced to.
Mom, I'm trying to eat breakfast.
Almost done. Aw, your mustache is really coming.
Mom! Baby! Ow! I'm bleeding. You made me bleed.
You'll live. Phoebe! What are you doing?
Neighbor's electricity is running out of phase, so I tied in and bumped us up to 220. Now I can run my lathe.
And you didn't think to ask me?
I mean, you just demonstrate zero aptitude for science.
Uh-huh. Got it.
You're better at other things, like
hairdryer.
Quesadillas. Your quesadillas are excellent.
Thank you.
Yep, we've got Mum, Sarah Polly. What's her actual name? Carrie Coon.
Carrie Coons.
Yes, we've got Carrie Coons. We've got her son, Finn Wolfhart.
I prefer to just to call him Mike from Stranger Things.
We've got her son, Mike from Stranger Things, and then little baby everyone, young everyone, as her daughter. So that's the family unit we've got. And they're in trouble. They've got no money. And that's a bad thing to be in wherever they are. Looks like New York. Probably New York. So they got to get kicked out. And luckily, though, her grandfather, who I think it said she never met...
Well, it's little everyone's grandfather, but Carrie Coons' father.
Right.
I can't remember if they said never met. That'd be wild. There's some real negligence that they try to hand wave away later in the film. Like, but it's inexcusable if he, no matter whether he met her or not, he definitely was a absentee father.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh my God, it's like, hang on a minute. Why did they keep shying away from what's-her-name's father? Is that going to be someone? Is that going to be revealed to be some character? Are they hoping for a late Moranis resurgence at some stage and that'll turn out to be Carrie Coon's partner? That's a troubling and upsetting thought that's occurred. Let's hope that's not the case.
I would assume and hope not, but now that you've said it, maybe it wouldn't surprise me.
Maybe it'll be James Acaster.
Maybe. The only reason to go see Frozen Empire.
Yes. Oh, God. I can't wait. Anyway, so, yes, they're going to move out to the creepy old farmhouse where their grandfather died. Where, Sergeant Everyone's grandfather died, Sergeant. And whilst there, they discover that Janine from the first fucking movie's about.
Yeah, that cameo came up so much quicker than I remember it in the past. Yes.
Can I help you?
Hi. This is my father's place.
I'm Janine Melnitz. We spoke on the phone. I was your father's, we were friends. Very sorry for your loss.
It's okay. You've known better than me. I should be sorry for your loss.
Oh, I just tried to keep the bills paid on time. That kind of thing.
Like a money manager?
Oh, there was no money to manage. He could barely keep the power on.
Yeah, that was a surprise, and she's here to tell them, hey, you're fucked, you're gonna stay here for at least the length of a movie.
Whole movie?
Can't we set half of this in New York like Jason Takes Manhattan? That was Ottawa. Oh.
The trip from New York to the farmhouse, they establish what the kids are good at very quickly.
Oh, right.
In that Phoebe's very good at science and can pick locks, I guess. And Mike from Stranger Things likes cars. And you can tell that by the fact he fixes a car and has a car on his t-shirt at all times.
Somehow that was too subtle for me. Didn't pick up on that beautiful piece of character building. Oh, God. So... yeah, feeling miserable, they go out for burgers. And we get a good reminder that all teens are dicks. And it's very endearing. And Finn Wolfhart, Mike from Stranger Things, meets a lady. Oh boy, this subplot comes rushing back. And I'm preemptively bored.
Well, the lady in question just happens to be Celeste O'Connor, who's having a terrible year because she just appeared in Madam Web.
Oh no, Celeste! Oh no, I can picture you as this fucking in Madam Web. Oh God. Don't worry, you're a part of cult movie canon now. You just have to embrace it. So get ready for the conventions. Get ready to for people to say her web connects them all to you.
Well, sure, it started off rocky with Madam Web, but it's okay, Celeste, because Frozen Kingdom's just around the corner.
Oh, man. It's going extremely well. So, yes, he gets a job there so he can impress Celeste. And then they go home and discover, and little baby everything discovers that her grandfather likes playing chess, and he's a bit of a dick about it. Knocking pieces off the board when he takes them.
And I really appreciated the fact that there was no incredulity in her when a ghost starts playing chess with her. She's just like, yes.
Yeah. Everyone's just incredibly casual about all of the paranormal activity in this movie, because people kind of remember that the first one happened. Like, this vaguely implied some people still don't believe it, but otherwise people are just kind of chill about it.
Yeah, like, it's, oh yeah, it's such a huge, weird plot hole that they're like, yeah, there was ghosts 30 years ago, but then they just disappeared, and we're not going to really explain why, other than the fact that our film takes place 30 years in the future.
That would be a crazy line from a horror movie of just, a dragon? There hasn't been a dragon in this town for 30 years. That's not very long ago.
And there's footage of the
so much footage of ghosts. it's ridiculous. Anyway,
but we basically learn that people remember the Ghostbusters when little baby everything goes to summer school for some reason.
Yes, because it beats helping the mum to clean up the house.
Yeah, it feels convoluted, but I guess they needed to introduce her to Paul Rudd, and then the most egregious character in this entire film.
Yeah. Oh dear, oh dear, oh dear.
Oh dear.
Speeding. 3, 2, 1. She sits alone. An outcast, rejected by her peers. But what is her secret? Perhaps she's on the run. On the run? From herself. And go.
Actually, my grandfather died. My mom says we're just here to pick through the rubble of his life.
So you're here to uncover the mystery of his death?
No. It was natural causes.
Are you sure it wasn't unnatural causes?
Okay. He's so funny. I love sassy kids.
Well, I mean, sure, he's fine. But we have to address his name.
Oh, his name. Well, what's he all about? He's not wearing any shirt to indicate what he's all about, so we're going to have to find some other way.
He's not wearing a shirt, but he has got headphones, he has got a microphone, and he's very subtly named podcast.
Look, I go around with my... Because you never know.
You never know.
You never know when you're going to be out in the streets and suddenly inspiration strikes. You realize, hang on a minute, we could do a podcast episode on Hulk, the Ang Lee movie. And where are you? Where's your mic? At home? Rubbish. It's not good. The moment passes.
To be fair, podcast doesn't have such demands, but you, Paul, you never know when.
Literally, it strikes at any time. Yeah. I often don't know, and I'm taken by surprise.
Exactly.
But yeah, this kid does podcasts on the mysterious and the unknown, and so covers quite a bit of the... Well, basically, he has a podcast about exposition. He's very passionate about it, and subsequently is very good at sort of reeling it off when needed. Oh, God. Now, there's a couple of sequences here that I didn't even bother to write down. What's the outcome of the first day at summer school? She finds out that he's researching the area because there's weird seismic activity.
Yes, we're introduced to everyone's favorite man, Paul Rudd. not everyone's favorite man. Paul, because that would be...
No, of course.
Either you or Goodman. I will not fall either side of that line.
That's fair. I respect that. Although you are wearing a shirt that says I heart Paul Goodman. But that's fine.
Shit. But what's his name? Something... Gruberson?
Yeah, Gruberson.
Yeah.
Mr. Gruberson.
So we'll call him Gruberson from now on. Because that's the joke, I guess. He's got a name.
Yep.
Paul Gruberson is researching the seismic activity that's happening in this town because it's not on a tectonic plate. Why is it happening?
Yeah, it's like little tremors happening all the time, like little explosions under the ground. Very strange. So then, now what happens between that and the next day of school? Because my next note is about the second day at summer school.
Same.
Anything in between?
Nothing. I assume there was a little bit of, like, Carrie Coons walking around the house looking sad. Finn Wolfhard discovers the Ecto-1, but...
Yeah.
And he that's there.
Has a disappointing first day.
Yeah.
It's thrilling.
It's not really anything. Then... But, little baby everything discovers... the ghost trap in the floor after
That's
solving
it.
A
yes,
little
she...
puzzle.
Ooh. Yeah, she finds the trap, which has something still in it, and she goes and back to school where all the kids are watching Chucky, and, yeah, reveals to the teacher the trap, and he decides, well, we should open it. That can be extremely dangerous. Hey, being a scientist is about being a maverick, doing unexpected... That's really bad science.
Yeah, exactly. They establish, Gruberson establishes that he really believes in ghosts, and the thought is, let's open the ghost trap and let the ghost out. They are dumb as hell.
Hang on a minute, though. I'm forgetting why I'm sat in this theater. Oh, good, a clip from the original movie. That's right. That's right. I'm here chasing a distant childhood.
Good to
remember that.
Look how young Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd look.
Look how charismatic and not insane they both look. So, yes, they accidentally let a ghost out, which everybody is mildly distressed about.
Yeah.
Irritates them a little bit. Yeah, you know.
They get over it very quickly.
They do, as does Finn Wolfhard after seeing a ghost in a well after they go on a fun road trip. Oh, Mike from Stranger Things.
Oh, right, that's right.
After they see the other side, or whatever it was called in that show. Down a well, and it gets them, and it's all scary, like fucking the Demogorgon.
Have you seen Stranger Things? I'm just out of curiosity.
I saw the first season once a few years ago.
Fair enough.
Demogorgon.
They go to hang out in a mine, because I guess that's the cool place to be. They sit on this bench on top of like a mine shaft, and not in a million billion years would I do that. I value my life far too much. But
it's so cool, and these kids are so edgy.
Well,
they don't give a cuss.
I think it's really worth pointing out something that never comes up in the film whatsoever, but is in the credits. One of these teens at the teen hangout spot is called Skittles.
Now that's a backstory that we are devastatingly denied.
Deleted scenes.
Maybe the
explain.
Director's cut.
Give me the Skittles cut.
The Skittles backstory, the Skittles cut, restore the Skittles cut, damn it. We get a moment where Paul Rudd is at the house and it finds a map of the town, but it's from hundreds of years before that should have been possible. He's like, isn't this bizarre, fascinating, incredible? Can we see it, the map? No. That's for me, Paul Rudd. Not for you, the audience. Oh, sounded interesting. No. We're not paying the production designer any more money. Not after he took it all for the Slimer Mac 2.
Which we're about to be introduced to.
Yes. Yes, it's... Oh, there's a ghost around here that needs busting. It's Blue Slimer. He's so cute and threatening.
Knock off Slimer.
They find the proton pack and they blast it around a bit. And now it's time for, a tremendous... an exciting chase scene throughout the fucking town, because Finn's story is here too. Hooray.
Yeah, he finally fixes the Ecto-1 and is a little bit creepy about it. Because when he's doing it, he's like, when he's trying to get the car started, he's like, come on, darling. It's like, ugh.
Oh, God.
Mike from Stranger Things, don't be a creep.
People can't be normal about their cars, is what I've learned. And I don't know why, but... it's troubling. It's a troubling reality that we're all experiencing together. Nevertheless, it works. They capture the thing, but also destroy half the town. So they get put in jail.
By Bokeem Woodbine, who is criminally underused in this film.
Yes, because I literally had no thoughts about him whatsoever, but I know that name.
He was notably in Fargo season 2. But he was also in Spider-Man Homecoming, which is what more people might know him as Shocker.
Yes. Oh, God. He was in Queen Slim. Okay, yes. I know this wonderful man. and I'm very distressed about the situation here.
Really talented actor, has maybe four lines in this film, and one of them one of is the worst line of the entire film.
Oh, I hope the score builds up to it. Pay attention, everyone. Kids making out at the back. Dads who have fallen asleep. Wake up for a minute. You're going to like this. This is for you. This bit's for you.
Hey, don't we get a phone call?
Sure you do. Who are you going to call?
And to make matters worse, the person they call is Dan Aykroyd.
Technically a Ghostbuster. She technically, little baby everything, technically called a Ghostbuster, Paul.
The worst answer to that question. Oh, yes. Dan Aykroyd's here. He celebrates the Reagan years for a bit. And, you know, also, I didn't know you could just stop someone from hanging up by saying, wait, like twice.
Well,
he's very open to suggestion.
Maybe he was hoping she would mention Crystal Skull Vodka. Like, oh, hold on. You know,
which well, that's a fine beverage.
I am surprised there is no mention of it in this film whatsoever. I didn't even spot on the bookshelf of his weird bookshop.
That's almost worse, because everybody who knows who Dan Aykroyd is suddenly thinks about it because they're looking for it. Because it's not there, they spend the rest of the movie looking for it. That's how good that marketing was.
Oh, boy. Oh, you say marketing. I mainly know it from that one episode of Off Menu where he was deranged.
Oh, I haven't seen that, really. Yeah. Oh, no. Oh, God, I don't think
he doesn't really
that.
Know the format, and he's just plugging his vodka for like 20 minutes.
Oh, no. Oh, God, I kind of want to listen, but I don't want to.
Well, I think it's fine, because clearly him and James are co-stars now.
Well, yes, so it seems. So, at the very least, they want that James fucking Acaster crowd to come up. The other day, I was walking past his show, Heckler's Welcome, in London.
Wonderful show.
Oh, I should go to see it.
It's so good.
There were two women in front of me, two young women, and one of them was just like, oh, he's really funny, and the other one was just like, he's so hot. It just occurred to me how surreal that interaction is. And what did he eat? Because for some reason in my head, I don't think of Acaster as like a superstar. I just think of him as like a bloke. And so hearing these two women just reminisce about how hot he is, like, I kind of wanted to tweet him to let him know. These two girls think you're hot.
I think to certain demographics he is hot, but he, you know, he is a comedy great, and the only reason to watch the next Ghostbusters, in my opinion.
Oh, God. I really hope he whips out some of that magic. I really hope it's not British person and American movie energy.
Well, based on the one trailer I've watched, I kind of get the vibes that he might die early. So,
oh no, well, he's barely in it, but he's in the poster, at the very least in the UK poster, so that bait and switch. If that happens, I'm leaving.
Yeah.
Although he might come back as a ghost.
Oh, that's true.
Oh, hopefully they don't bust franchise. Him. No. Well, I'm busting out of here.
But yes, so she calls Dan Aykroyd, and he gives like the laziest lore dump you've ever seen about like the last 36 years.
Yeah, Jesus.
Yeah, it made me think about the sadness of legacy characters. Like, you know, in when these films jump 36 years, these characters haven't just been living like a nice, happy life for that amount of time. Some or all of them have always like just been miserable or in exile or like die. And it's just it's overwhelmingly a bummer, because you're like, oh, a new Star Wars? I wonder what my dear friend Han Solo's up to. Oh, he's sad and old and is divorced and his son hates him and will ultimately stab him in the chest and then he'll die in this film. Oh.
That's true of all of us. We all sad and old and get killed by our children who stab us in the chest. But that doesn't mean that the adventure wasn't worthwhile the whole time. And maybe all of this legacy sequel miserableness will finally be turned on its head by Twisters. Helen Hunt's been great.
Is there actually anyone in Twisters? Because was that Pullman or Paxton?
That was Paxton.
So he's...
No.
No?
I doubt... You know what? I said it and was like, let's live with that for a while after I said it. And then
I think
like,
it's Pullman.
No, I'm
I think
not happy with that.
Because Paxton, sadly, passed away.
Yes, so it's Paxton, so we're not getting any Paxton.
Yeah, exactly.
And then it's Helen Hunt. Yeah. And we haven't got Philip Seymour Hoffman. Yep, no, I'm not seeing anyone involved in the original. Glenn Powell, good lord.
Hopefully, they'll just say they're off living a happy life.
Katie O'Brien. All right, oh, I'm going to go.
All right,
Twisters.
We're back on board. We're all off to Twisters.
Twisters is back on, everyone.
Get Bex on the phone. Bex, we're seeing Twisters.
I just pressed the Katie O'Brien alert button that I've now placed onto her phone. How did you do this?
I thought you were going to say
I've got a Statham alarm.
You press the Bex button that you now have. They're always a button away.
It's just Bex on a train back into London.
Yeah, they wouldn't. Not for Twisters. Anyway, where
not for Twisters. Anyway, I'll tell you this about Bokeem Woodbine, though. He's really chill about nuclear weapons being pulled on him in an angry moment, because that's exactly what Little Miss Everything does. And somehow that just gets breezed past. It's like, don't do that again. Oh, God. Next thing that I have noted is that Paul Rudd goes to buy Baskin-Robbins.
Well, yes. So
you should too, kids.
Those dumb shits released what turns out to be one of the hell dogs from the trap days ago. So, but it's only now showing up in the world's most empty Walmart.
Yes.
And I have
Paul Rudd was let in after hours.
Yeah, like
it's like, yeah, you go get your Baskin Robbins.
This scene stank to me of big reshoot energy.
Yeah, post-production, we don't have enough fun ghost stuff.
Yeah. In a post-pandemic world where they couldn't have extras in the Walmart, so it's literally only Paul Rudd in the entire Walmart.
Hey, it's Hollywood. You can always kill a few extras to fill out your mall scene if you want to. I'm guessing they just would have complicated the special effects, and they really wanted to get this done quickly and easily.
Well, yeah,
but
you
also, nobody
you,
lives in this town.
That's true, to be fair. Quite a big Walmart for a nowhere town.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, this is a Sony movie, so of course there's product placement. Walmart and Baskin-Robbins. I am deeply surprised we didn't see a Sony Xperia phone at any point or a laptop like in Casino Royale. But
love that.
They're clearly getting that. And again, this is why it also stank of post-production reshoots, because it was like, "What? Walmart and Baskin-Robbins will pay us? Get Rudd back on." And the final reason...
We forgot the product placement, everyone.
The final reason that I felt this stank of post-production reshoots was because of the Grogu-fication of this film.
Oh, no. The cute little guys.
The little Stay Puft marshmallows that made no fucking sense. There's no explanation
for why they're here.
What brought them here? What? No one was thinking about the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. They are only here with Sony's sad little hope to sell merchandise and NFTs.
Oh, God.
Yes. No. So Sony did release...
Oh, no.
What were they called? So I looked it up. You can go to 12 Days of Afterlife, the official sanctioned NFT campaign, where, and I quote, 3,000 mini puffs are coming to the blockchain.
Oh, mini puffs. I don't want them in the block. Well, maybe the blockchain's the best place for them. Oh. The blockchain is very much like how I imagined a containment unit from the first Ghostbusters.
Maybe.
It's just where awful things are put.
But
Jesus Christ.
For some reason, again, this scene makes no fucking sense whatsoever, but these Stay Puft Marshmallow Men just start killing themselves.
Yeah, fuck me. Oh, God. Yes. Yes, they're doing like a suicide bunny thing, which is a very niche reference in this day and age.
Yeah, there's a blender there's a display blender that is inexplicably plugged in and working for some of the Stay Puft Marshmallow to kill each other with. It's a bad scene that I'm pretty sure was used as a Super Bowl trailer.
Love it.
I hate everything about this bit. But ultimately, it ends with Paul Rudd being attacked by
Rick Moranis.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Very much the scene from Ghostbusters 1, except this time they're getting paid by Walmart.
Oh my god, I just remembered how funny Rick Moranis is in that party scene when he's introducing everyone and being really specific. Oh god. All right. Let's swing it round. We can't think about funny things at this stage. We've got too busy with an exposition monologue. We haven't had one of those in a while. So, yeah, McKenna, everyone, gathers the other people around, including Finn's girlfriend Celeste now, who I guess is just about, probably not girlfriend, he's 15, weird detail, but she's on board now, she's going to be part of the gang. I guess he charmed her at some stage, maybe it was in the last scene where they had a really terse interaction and his little sister almost killed her dad. But they're going to start investigating Goza, we're doing Goza again, and she's in a well, and it's all great.
Yeah, Ivor Shandor, the dogs. Have you figured it out yet, kids? It's Ghostbusters. Yeah. It's just Ghostbusters
again. This movie is Ghostbusters. This is a Ghostbusters movie. So Ghostbusters happens, and it turns out when they go down and explore that the reason for the earthquakes is that Egon set up various proton packs in a circle so that the streams would be crossed regularly in order to suppress Goza. And that's creating mini little nuclear explosions underneath the town every so often. Cool.
I think they just hoped that no one would question anything. I think that was the overall hope. That they
Is that going to happen forever?
I guess so. It doesn't make any sense, but the one good thing about this scene,
one good thing,
is that I get to continue my segment, West Wing Walk-Ons. That's right, I've named it. It's now, is that what you get to? Is that how you get something to be a reoccurring segment? If you just name it and force
it's
it
worse
down
than
your
that.
Throat?
Now Goodman has to. Goodman has to do a jingle now. He'll have had that notification on his phone.
Oh, good.
It's happening.
I can only apologize, Paul, but it's West Wing Walk-Ons. So do with that as you will.
West Wing Walk-Ons. West Wing Walk-Ons. West Wing Walk-Ons.
But anyway, and I'm really happy to say that I looked it up retroactively and there were no West Wing Walk-Ons in Burnt. So...
Okay, good. We haven't missed any.
We haven't missed any. So there's only one actor in this film that was ever in the West Wing. And they...
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Not J.K. Simmons.
It's J.K. Simmons.
J.K. Simmons was in the West Wing.
J.K. Simmons...
How bizarre.
...was in the Season 7 episode Duck and Cover, playing Nuclear Regulatory Commission Chairman Harry Ravitch.
Amazing. Actually, this is a good chance for me to apologize for the previous West Wing walk-on, where I mistook the British ambassador who appeared in several episodes, who I did recognize the second I went back to sample, for Roger Rees, who plays the recurring character of Lord Mulberry,
yes.
I think his name is.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, I fucked that up. So
no,
obviously,
I was also nondescript about it. but yes, J.K. Simmons is here playing an incredibly weird little cameo as Ivor Shandor.
Yes. So bizarre. He's in it for 5 seconds and then gets torn in half by bloody Gonzo.
But
Majestic Gonzo.
I did think it was weird until I realized that J.K. Simmons has been in so many of Jason Reitman's films, including Thank You for Smoking, Juno, Up in the Air, and The Front Runner.
Yeah, there you go. I guess it makes sense. He's a Reitman regular. A Reitman regular and a West Wing walk-on. What a wonderful man he is. Oh, God. So, yeah. Mum, meanwhile, finds the Batcave and finds out, oh, my dad was spying on me for all those decades. And then she gets possessed by the fucking dog. And he's now the Keymaster.
I hated this so much. Because they just try... Look, he's got so many pictures of you, Carrie Coons. That makes him a good dad. He loved you. He was never there for you and you never got to meet him. And he could have called you on the phone. It would have been really simple to do so, actually. They still have phones in this nowhere town. But instead, he just has hundreds of photos.
Look, I have many, many photos of Alison Brie. But that does not mean that I'm in any way a good father to her. It's just not equivalent. It's Jason not... Reitman. And I'm worried that you think it might be.
But...
I was trying to think of someone relatively harmless to say that about and then realised there's no one, really.
There's no one.
There's no one to make that joke to soften the blow. So, you had it full on. And God bless you all for that. So... Is there time, as we're suiting up to take on this great evil, for a 15-year-old to spy on the naked lady? Always. There's always time for that.
Always. You think that shit would be left in 2013 with Star Trek, the second one.
But oh, wow.
Into Darkness, that's what that one was called.
Yes.
But no, Mike from Stranger Things is going to try and take a little peek at Celeste from Madam Web.
A little peek. From Madam Web Celeste. Oh god, even in Star Trek Into Darkness, I remember the Discord being, ooh, this is quite old fashioned.
Yes.
The fact that you've done this.
Yes.
And now we're 11 years on. God almighty.
Absolutely
anyway,
baffling.
There's a big chase, and it all looks quite bad. And then they combine their efforts and they work as a team, and they fail to beat Goza. Shit.
Well, yeah, so Goza's here now. Hi, yeah! Everyone. Goza's here. And what a surprise. It's director of Don't Worry, Darling, Olivia Wilde.
Oh, my God. I assumed that she was a CGI recreation of the actor who portrayed her in the original 1984 Ghostbusters. Such is the beauty of Olivia Wilde. That I'm unable to plausibly accept that she's not a special effect, which was also what I remember thinking about Rachel Zegler. So that's just a thing I have.
There's something about Olivia Wilde's Goza, though, that I felt that they looked like a yassified version of one of the engineers from Prometheus.
We never see what the women look like.
Could be Goza.
Could be a Gozer alike. It could all be Olivia Wilde. Oh my god. So yes. They chase. They get back to the farm. They fail to beat her. There's no hope left. All of our characters we spent the whole movie following are failing to realize their potential and stop the threat. What are we going to do? Who are you going to call?
I don't know. The sheriff? Is it Bokeem Woodbine?
Is it Bokeem Woodbine? Oh my god, why didn't Bokeem Woodbine show up? Shoot Gozer in the fucking head and say a cool thing afterwards. That's what they set up, but it didn't happen. Instead, it's the fucking dudes from the first Ghostbusters. Dudes, you know, Dan Aykroyd, Bill Murray, and Ernie Hudson show up.
I think she remembers us.
Are you a god?
Ray?
Oh, come on, Ray.
Yes. Yeah, we're all gods.
Yeah, I mean, we're all pretty dang special down here. On a personal note, I thought that we had busted up for good. I mean, it wasn't working for me. My friends didn't think so. I know yours did.
Okay, playtime's over. Let's toast this muffin.
And let me tell you, they are moving slow. Some real Ford energy to this movement as they shuffle slowly towards the cornfield.
Some real Robert De Niro from The Irishman energy here, and I mean the last scenes. So yeah, they show up and they do some riffing and reference their first movie, and it's all very good. It's very, very good, and I'm glad I spent my money. But it's not enough. It's not enough to hold back Goza, you know. Oh no, what are we gonna... Well, she uncrossed the streams. Such a clever subversion. Oh good, dead Harold Ramis is here.
And the first time you see it, it looks
yes.
kind of, you're like, wow, I guess this is maybe what Harold Ramis would look like if he hadn't died 9 years ago.
Died in real life.
And it's a little bit,
yeah.
It's a little bit like, oh gosh, Harold Ramis. But the more he's on screen, the more he begins to look like a Naughty Dog character, where his face doesn't move all that much. And you know, Naughty Dog characters, they look very cool, but they're also indescribably, like, definitively a video game character, and that is what Harold Ramis CGI looks like, and it's bad.
Also, maybe the first time you see him, you might naively think that'll be the only time you see him. He won't, after the fight, stick around and not say anything for about 5 minutes, just awkwardly in frame.
Yeah,
like,
just
ghost of my dead granddad.
Just sort of shrug and point and, like, not move his face at all. And it really made me question, why is Harold Ramis, or why is Egon just, like, a chill ghost version of himself when we have nasty little freaks like Muncho and Slimer? Like,
look, you gotta have a fucking tight sense of yourself. Maybe that's it. Maybe you have to be very disciplined and sort of aware of who you are. But he wasn't. He was a fucking mess. He should have come back as a bad dad ghost. The Slimer equivalent of a deadbeat dad.
Just sort of shedding horrible, creepy photos of his daughter as he walks.
Yeah, his eyes are cameras. Like, just a horrible, grotesque thing.
Just...
yeah. God. Anyway.
But, yeah.
I've still got the note, is there time to spy on a naked lady highlighted? Let me move on a little.
You know what? Spoilers, yeah, after... they beat Gozer.
Yeah, after way too long, they eventually win. Wait, I stopped paying attention to who was a dog. Did Paul Rudd nearly fuck that poor girl, or vice versa?
Yeah, like, at some point, Madame Webb Celeste becomes a dog to... because Carrie Coon's
Dakota
got released
Johnson
from being
a dog. Dakota Johnson
becomes
a dog in this movie. It's unbelievable.
But it doesn't matter, because they trap Gozer. There's a huge ghost, like, tornado. Oh, twisters.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a ghost. There's
oh,
a ghost,
no.
Twisters.
It's, it's all the same universe. This is the origin story of Twisters. So, yeah, there's a thing. Ernie cares about the car now. God, they never could be bothered to do anything with him, could they? And, yeah. Oh, look, the cynically exploited image of that dead actor is saying goodbye to the daughter he never interacted with. Bye. Bye. This is beautiful. Thank you. Bye.
And then he just sort of evaporates into, like, stardust. And you think, can all ghosts do that? Why are we capturing
Will
them?
Will Slimer do that one day? Why are we capturing them? They're not getting therapy in there. This is a horrible, horrible reveal. Oh, God. So, yeah. The movie ends. It cuts to credits.
It says...
and we can finally move on. Oh, what does it say?
Dedicated to Harold. And... I guarantee that the next one will be dedicated to Ivan, who died a year after this film came out.
Oh, God. Oh, dear. I hope he gets CGI'd into the director's seat somehow.
Well, spoilers. He was sometimes the stand-in for Harold Ramis.
So he'll be CGI'd in as the stand-in for the CGI other guy. Fucking hell. Oh, God, there's a... yeah, anyway. Oh, no, there's a post-credit sequence.
There's two post-credit sequences, Paul.
I refuse to acknowledge that yet at this stage of my terrible life. Yes.
Wavy lines.
It's amazing.
You're amazing with your ability to flood my psychic powers.
I can't believe you used to shock your students.
Between us... Ali zap the guys.
At least Sigourney Weaver is here. Surprise! Unless you watch this on Amazon Prime, where it is starring Sigourney Weaver. Shit you not.
I mean, everyone loves Sigourney Weaver. It's nice.
Everyone loves.
It's lovely to see her. It's a stupid cameo that doesn't make any sense.
No, why are they doing this right now? Why are they doing this with this equipment that he hasn't used? That's such a disposable scene in the original movie. It's the training ball from Star Wars coming out again.
Yeah.
It's like, that was nothing. That meant nothing to these characters. That little test with the cards was something Venkman did to flirt with co-eds. He has no emotional attachment to it. It would be like me going back and being like, oh, my old franking machine. God, I miss it. I miss franking post. Fucking hell.
Yeah, it is fan service at its absolute worst. But at the same time, it is nice to see Sigourney. Hello, Sigourney.
Yeah. Hello, Sigourney. Oh, no, there's another one.
Another post-credit.
Oh, a deleted scene. Deleted scene from 1984. Oh, that's such a good and subtle joke about the pet, the coin. I have another one at home that so bespeaks how good the humor was in the original fucking movies and how angry I am now. Oh, and a whole scene for Ernie Hudson. How generous. Yeah, let's stick that right at the end.
Yeah, very, very confidently setting up a sequel, which sadly has come to pass.
Which Adam Sandler has Frozen, made pass.
Yeah, Frozen Empire comes out next week or whatever.
Ghostbusters Frozen.
Ghostbusters Frozen 2 Into the Unknown comes out next week.
It's ironic because the last thing any of these men are going to do is ever let it go.
But I would have loved it if this had been it. And again, just very confidently set up a sequel that would never happen.
Oh, yeah, that would have been lovely, but unfortunately this made all the money. Because people love this. Alright, Sarah, how did it hold up for you?
Badly.
This particular rewatch.
Badly. I wouldn't even say badly. I'd say I didn't like it the first time I watched it, and I still didn't like it the second time.
Yes.
It didn't get worse, it didn't get better. It was exactly as bad as I remembered.
Fair. Yeah, it's rough. It's interesting, because when it started, the initial chase sequence, and then the opening sequences setting up the family, I was thinking to myself, well, why should it? I'm having paradoxical feelings here. Every reference to the original movie is irritating me, and yet I'm also irritated they've left New York. Like, what do I want? You know? Like, do I want a retread of the first one? I'm annoyed by every reference to it. And I was like, well, where am I with this? Why am I so annoyed by it? And then as the movie went on, it became clear to me why I was so annoyed by it. That just everything is either taken from the original or is stunningly generic. It's just every new thing they have created. Hey, let's focus on family. That's an original thing for a blockbuster to do. No blockbusters have ever been about family before. And, oh God, the setting just feels incredibly cliche. The Wolfart story is so boring. Him working at the diner. I get so bored by that. It feels like they're just like, hey, we've got the Stranger Things kid coming in. All right, we better make up some weird Americana then. For some reason. Like, I don't know. The first Ghostbuster, the priority was comedy. It's a comedy film. The ghost stuff feels second and yet is also very tantalizing as a result, because there are a lot of things that, you know, are a little inexplicable, and there's little suggestions of a darkness there. You know, a couple of moments, just little incidental jokes that are a little darker than you expect, which are quite fun. Here, the comedy can't be the focus because the comedy is Marvel-esque. It's just the comedy of a blockbuster movie, you know? Not that funny.
Yeah. So
so the priority is nostalgia, is references. That's the meat. That's the action of the movie, is the nostalgia pieces. Nostalgia pieces. I don't think it's a phrase that exists. And yet this movie indulges in nostalgia pieces.
I also think that they were... Like, so the tone is just so off because it's nothing like the first two films. I think they were going for is like a mix of Ghostbusters meets Stranger Things.
Right.
And it's trying to be a thing that was already trying to be another thing. So it's trying to be Stranger Things, which was already trying to be like 80s children adventure movies. So it's like the snake eating its own tail. It's just like... nostalgia upon nostalgia upon nostalgia, and it just falls apart. It cannot hold.
It's so cloyingly sentimental. You know, it just it treats every object from the first movie as being so revered. Like, oh, the Ecto-1! Look, the ghost trap! And it just holds it at these long sequences and of other characters reacting to it in awe as well. And sort of, you know, all things inherited from The Force Awakens, which is a movie I quite like, but every rewatch now, its faults do become a little more obvious, especially in the sort of light of The Rise of Skywalker. The manipulation of it becomes all the more evident. But yeah, with Ghostbusters Afterlife, it is just so reverent to the original movies and just assumes all of the emotional investment is coming from the audience's connection with that property, as opposed to trying to engender any kind of new connection to the characters, who are for the most part sort of stereotypes and stock characters. There are a couple of exceptions we'll talk about in a moment. But the whole thing just feels really deeply cynical, like a money-making sort of thing, which every blockbuster is, but this feels more so. And it's a shame, because one thing that's interesting is this movie is incredibly sentimental. It's sort of softly lit. It has the music, a music which is, you know, almost all of the music is taken from Elmer Bernstein's score for the original Ghostbusters into this film. I can't think of a cue that doesn't get used. Like, even the weird piano thing that happens when Bill Murray is about to shock the guy, and he, like, hesitates, and there's a sort of... You hear that in this movie? It's ridiculous. In a different moment. But what's funny about that is cynicism is baked into the story of the original Ghostbusters, because it is a 1980s Reaganomic kind of pro-capitalist movie about, you know, a basic pest exterminator, like an emergency service, essentially, privatizing itself and charging its sort of needy customers extortionate money to rid themselves of, you know, ghosts, which should definitely be handled by the local authorities in some way. This is life. This is endangering life. And yet, you know, their greatest villains is government oversight. That's Walter Peck, you know. So it was always a sort of Reaganite fever dream that at the very least was just fun enough to make you gloss over all of that. Here, the cynicism is within the making of the film. It's moved behind the camera to the point where this almost feels like the movie that the Ghostbusters themselves would have commissioned about themselves to try and make a quick buck out of their exploits. It's like a parody of a legacy sequel, this film. I'm very frustrating for it. Okay, I think I've swung myself out. Do you have anything else to say?
No. I think we are good to move on.
We are. We'll go to quickfire. But one last note, which is just this. If you could see the number of 5-star reviews I scrolled past, I didn't end up quoting any of the reviews for this, because Google is just filled with 5-star reviews for this film. This is what people want, I think. This is what the fans think they want. And whenever a legacy sequel comes out that dares to be a little different or even critical about, you know, the earlier film, which tends to be the movies I like better, movies like The Last Jedi or Suspiria or Blade Runner 2049, movies that dare to be a little different and not just wallow in the nostalgia of the previous one, people hate them as a result for it, because they want this. They just want the iconography and the beats of the same story and the repetition and the comfort. And it might be what people want, but it's not good for them. It's not good for their sense of curiosity, which ultimately I think, you know, is one of the great things in the world, is a natural curiosity. And I feel like movies like this just stunt that curiosity and just make you long for familiarity. I think I've made this too lofty. Basically, this movie's everything that's wrong with the world. Let's quickfire. Quickfire.
Well, my first point, you were a little critical of it just now, but I was okay with the score by Rob Simonson, who also did the scores for The Way, Way Back and The Spectacular Now.
Yes.
Because as much as I didn't love the Stranger Things tone of this film, I think that Rob at least understood the assignment and made a score that sort of perfectly blended the original score by Elmer Bernstein with something a little bit more like tense at times.
So
good job Rob.
It certainly didn't stand out at any stage. It fit in very perfectly with what the filmmakers were doing. I do like the pacing of the opening. That chase, the chase of Egon back to his place. It seemed like a suitable sort of a chase that an old man would be capable of, and the sort of tension of it when the thing goes wrong and all that's left is just go inside the house was quite good. Oh, and I like the mist just pouring into the room behind him, because a fair amount of the stuff was done with practical effects, and you could tell the mist was because it looked good. So I appreciate that.
Carrie Coons, she She almost felt out of place in this movie because she was acting her heart out. She was she was giving the performance of like a single mother who's really struggling and who never knew her dad, and she's giving it all the gusto of the actress we know and love from The Leftovers and Fargo season 3. And that totally also didn't quite fit sometimes with like, oh, the goofy podcast and Little Miss Everywhere are gonna go get some ghosts, and then Carrie's sad at home thinking about the pressures of life. Regardless, she's an incredible actress and it's always nice to see anything with her in.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I'll have one of the performers as well. I'll go for McKenna Grace because I thought she was really good. Her dialogue is often not very good, but she's very funny. She has good timing, good instincts. One of the moments that would, you know, is written in such a way that it is the comedy of this movie and therefore vaguely annoying. And yet, because of the way she delivered it, I enjoyed it, which is when, you know, she asked him whether or not he used 3 phones to try and triangulate something.
I know how many sides there are in a triangle.
I just thought you were being obtuse.
Was that a geometry joke?
Yes, that's why I winked.
And again, it's her delivery. Yeah. It's very good.
She is great in almost everything I've seen her in. She doesn't get much to do with Captain Marvel and Sabrina and whatever, but in The Haunting of Hill House, she's phenomenal.
Oh, yeah. Yes. 100%.
Oh, I think... The summer school was filled with cool-looking teens, and I wanted to learn more about them, but instead we learned more about podcasts and Skittles.
Did we learn enough about Skittles?
We didn't learn enough about Skittles, to be fair. At least the Skittles cut. But I think that if we had learned more about these cool teens, they would probably would have learned they'd have had names like Gotho.
Absolutely. Okay, having established that Paul Rudd is just going to very lazily show these kids movies that are not okay for them, starting with Cujo, it's quite funny that the next time we cut back to the school, without any sort of introduction or having him explain it, the kids are just watching Child's Play. That's quite funny. And the kids are so bemusedly watching it, to the point where none of them even react when they start tossing ghost traps around the place. They're all just absent-mindedly staring at the screen still.
My next point is that, again, even though I didn't love it, I do respect that the film attempted to be tonally different than the other Ghostbusters films. Even though it was Ghostbusters 1 again, it was at least like, it's Ghostbusters 1, but it's our Ghostbusters 1, where it's not as funny and it's basically Stranger Things. And, you know,
I
respect the attempt.
it is a different tone, because arguably Ghostbusters 2016 was closer in tone to the original Ghostbusters in terms of being just this comedy driven thing. Here we've got something which is much more plot driven, but you know, with these sort of characters. So, you know, aesthetically it was a different vibe, and I enjoyed that. Speaking of which, I really enjoyed the shot. I think they're talking about Chandor or Gozer, and we see a shot of a wall with runes on it, and there's like this tarp kind of billowing in front of it, and the very warm orange lighting made it look like something that perhaps Greg Fraser would have shot for Dune. Like, it had this really kind of impressive visual kind of opulence to it, which I quite liked.
Yes. This is going to go to show just how little I have to say about the film. This is good, because it's now jumping a little bit ahead. The practical effects on the terror dogs during the Walmart scene.
You
just love to see a practical effect. It's always better. There are still a few janky CGI shots of terror dogs throughout the film when they're jumping around and stuff, but a lot of times they did use the old practical big old puppet, and it's fun to see.
It is. You don't even have to wait long, because immediately after the really good shot of the terror dog, like, sat down eating a bag of something, we cut outside and it smashes through the Walmart door in order to chase after him. And the animators did not know how to move the terror dog into a darker sort of night lighting once he's outside, because the lighting does not change on him. I think it's cute, the idea that Egon kept one of his Ghostbusters jumpsuits. There's a bit where she's going through, I think it's the mum, I think it's Carrie Coon, she's going through the nutty basement that he has and finds, yeah, a cupboard full of the jumpsuits. And it's kind of fun because you don't know where the jumpsuits kind of came from. Was it a Venkman idea? You know, was it a commercial thing? We've got to have a uniform. Was it a safety thing? But still he kept hold of it from the glory days, in spite of the fact that he's now living in the middle of nowhere to the extent that everyone calls him the dirt farmer. You know, nobody seems to know him or like him. But he keeps hold of these little trinkets of the better days. It's cute.
While we're still in Egon's nutty little basement, when Celeste from Madame Web is down there, she comments on just how detailed his little model of the farm is. And I'm glad that she did, because I thought the exact same thing the first time. I was like, you've put a lot of effort into that model, Egon. Like, I guess you've got a lot of time just being the dirt farmer out here, yeah. But it's definitely a very accurate model of your own farm for no apparent reason.
It's got to be planned very meticulously, this trap. Oh my god. Paul Rudd didn't have that many lines that got me. And I think Paul Rudd needs to be a little more careful in his roles, because I'm starting to really forget what it is about him that I like. After this and Ant-Man, like, he's become a bit of a sort of, you know, RDJ without the wit kind of feel to him, which is not a position you want to be in. Nevertheless, he did have a line delivery in this I liked, which is, for some reason, I think he might be talking about how one of Carrie Coon's kids could become a pole dancer someday. And she says, oh, well, she's not very coordinated. And he says, oh, I don't think that matters.
That was a good line.
That was a good line.
If you're looking for reasons to love Paul Rudd, just go back to season 4 of Parks and Recreation, and he is phenomenal as Bobby Sweetums.
I had reason to remember how good Parks and Rec was the other day. It was the Herzog cameo. I saw it in isolation and realized that it might be the best Herzog cameo.
I'm moving to Florida to be closer to Disneyland.
It's how completely still he remains when Aubrey Plaza and Chris Pratt start making out.
Such a good... Oh, God.
Parks really good. It's really good.
But we can't talk about something that good right now because we're still talking about Ghostbusters.
No, true.
The visual effects when half of Gozer comes out of the cornfield because the other half is... in a pterodactyl. I don't remember why there's only half of Gozer, but it's like see-through skeletal juddering around. I thought it looked very creepy and cool. I liked that a lot.
Yeah, I like that. Okay, I'm on my last one, actually.
I'm on my last one.
All right. My last one is, when they show up at the end, you get a little whiff of why these guys worked quite well together and why Bill Murray was so charming. But more importantly than any of that for me, you just fucking remember how cool Lenny Hudson is and what a crime it was that he wasn't used more in the 90s. Like, every time he shows up in something, like he shows up in Congo, the really bad 90s movie with Laura Linney, and he's the coolest guy in it. You just think, why wasn't Hollywood using this? Damn it. He was so good.
Yeah.
And he's still got that voice. He's got that beautiful voice. And it just, it was good stuff.
I enjoyed that. He was definitely underutilized for a long time. He did have a very good recurring role on Grace and Frankie in the last 10 years.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah, it was always lovely to see him in that.
Mm.
But my final point is also that
they
may be old, but seeing the Ghostbusters was good. And I know it's giving in to the toxic nostalgia impulse.
Yeah.
But at the same time, when they were bantering, I was like, it's the Ghostbusters.
Maybe I just don't want this in movies. Do it at the fucking Oscars.
Yeah, do it in Casper.
Do it there. Just keep remaking Casper and have it happen there. Keep the Casperverse going.
Do it as like a 10-minute skit at the end of like a Stephen Colbert show or something. Don't make me watch an entire film with Mike from Stranger Things.
Fucking hell. Oh, God. All right, well, look, that's going to do it from us. But nevertheless, we got to check in with the OG team. They're all dead. They're all dead.
Oh, my God, no.
They're on a bus.
No.
They're all on the same bus, and it crashed, and now the OG team are ghosts.
Jenny Soames, no.
Jenny Soames. Jenny Soames. Jenny Bones.
Oh, good, dear. Good
this
stuff.
Is getting ghoulish.
Horrifying, because, you know, the implication.
Horrifying. But we love it. Yes, Gunman on the Street, Salt in the Sheets. We've already read that one. BT Calloway. Gotta keep your shit going. Says, I feel like a big problem here is that the audience knows much, much, much more than the characters, and it's dull watching them catch up, especially when they don't have their own arcs going on. Very good point.
Yeah, that's like a really good point.
That's a really good point. We do know what's going on because it is the first Ghostbusters, so we're just waiting for them to figure that out, and that is frustrating.
Yeah, and they're so right that, like, none of the arcs are fun to watch.
Yeah. No, they're not. I'm particularly aggravated by Finn Wolfhard, but I've got to stop hating on Mike from Stranger Things. It's not fair. Side characters Podcast and Paul Rudd are standouts because they have a personality.
Mm.
It's true. Not necessarily a good one.
No.
But...
No. I would never put Podcast as one of the good things.
That's fair. That's more than fair. Niall Bryden. Oh, God. Easy. Harold Ramis wasn't alive to witness this tragedy. Good Lord. Good Lord, sir. I'm surprised. I'm quite happy at that because I did expect some defenders, maybe. Some people being like, what are you reviewing this for? But nope. We carefully cultivated the OG team to include Niall Bryden and his clans. Meanwhile, over on Facebook, Jennifer Soane.
Yes.
Guess it's us to say. I haven't seen it, but I'm guessing some of the good things are Annie Potts, Paul Rudd, and Ernie Hudson.
Wow.
One out of three, certainly. Who's Annie Potts?
Janine.
Oh, Janine! Fuck me. Yes. Okay, yes.
Yeah. I would say, yeah, two out of three, and Paul is doing his best with what he's got.
Yeah, I think you have to start acknowledging that that's just true of Paul Rudd. Thank you very much, OGT. Now, I'm going to have one last desperate attempt to remember the one better thing I was so happy with when I thought of it earlier today, whilst you perhaps tell us what you think is a one better thing. The one better thing.
I have two one better things, and I have two because one of them is not a film yet again, just like we've burnt. but I will go with a film first, and if you enjoyed the directing of this film, and again... Yeah, a legacy director, the son of Ivan Reitman, Jason Reitman. But Jason Reitman has made quite a few good films. One that I'm particularly fond of, but caveat, I haven't watched it in a decade, so it might not have aged well, is Up in the Air. I think that, well, I remember thinking that film was great. George Clooney, yeah. Anna Kendrick, cameos from people like Zach Galifianakis and... Source Code. What's the woman?
Jake Gyllenhaal?
No.
Michelle Monaghan.
No. Vera.
Vera Farmiga.
There we go. She's the other main.
We went around the house with that one. Jeffrey Wright. go on, name another person from Source Code, you prick. No, it's impossible.
It is impossible. But the fact that you named that many is incredible. And the fact that I didn't say The Conjuring, is that her other famous franchise?
Yep.
Or The Departed. I somehow went to Source Code and you somehow followed me along to it.
We'd have been here all day if it was The Departed.
Al Pacino. He's not in that. I meant to say Jack Nicholson.
Yeah,
that
also sucked.
Anyway, my other one better thing, which isn't a film but it has been brought up already today, is the 2009 Ghostbusters video game, which did feature the original cast and was script doctored by Aykroyd and Ramis. It was set 2 years after Ghostbusters 2, and they could get away with it being like 1991 because it was video game. So like they look,
yeah,
they could make them look young. The gameplay was terrible, but you
really,
it wasn't the worst, but also it was like in an era of Uncharted 2. It wasn't Uncharted 2. It was...
Right, okay.
It definitely played like a much clunkier and worse designed game than that. But it was... All the actors were there. Bill Murray may have been sleepwalking through his lines. I can't quite remember. It's all on YouTube, I think. So if you would like, I'll check it out. You can go on YouTube and see. But I remember enjoying at least the cutscenes. And I did force myself through the so-so gameplay to see all the cutscenes. So those are my two better things.
Amazing. I have failed. I was so happy about it. I remember thinking, oh, that's perfect. What the hell was it? I would have tried to go, I think, for another high concept comedy thing. I've always said that I felt that my generation's Ghostbusters was Men in Black and doesn't necessarily get the full respect it deserves for being just a genuinely funny sort of sci-fi action movie that does put the comedy first and is entirely character-driven and funny in really subtle ways.
And it's also similar in that the sequel was terrible.
Yes, absolutely. And it got, you know, I think it was worse. Men in Black 2 is unarguably worse than Ghostbusters 2. Mm. You know, potentially just a cynical, but it's definitely worse. Yeah, no, that's going to have to do it, though, because I cannot remember. And that is the one better thing. The one better thing. Sarah, how can people hear more? More of your incredible mind.
My incredible mind. Well, you may already be familiar with the award-winning podcast Quest Fantastic, which features the wonderful, the wickedly talented Paul Salt.
Hello there.
But we are just starting our second season. We're moving on from Dungeons and Dragons to a game called Orbital Blues, which is a capitalist space western in the vein of Cowboy Bebop or Firefly. So I hope you'll check it out, because I'm really excited where the story is going to go, and with the characters that are dear friends, the Pauls, and sometimes guests Jen and Nell have created.
The best of us.
And if you want to hear, you know, no Paul, but just me and maybe sometimes guest Jen and sometimes guest Helen and sometimes guest Bex, you can check me out on the other actual play podcast, Role Plus Heart, which is a queer actual play podcast where we play a whole host of different games.
So many games. It's it puts us to shame. It was fantastic, frankly, the number of games you managed to get through. We're on our second third technically, fourth technically, didn't give them combined two for the interval. Yes, so I'm four, so we're good. We're powering through them.
And Role Plus Heart's on its 20th.
Oh, shit. It's fine. Season 3 is going to be buck wild. Different game each episode. Apologies for you having to GM that. Anyway. Oh, God. And for one good thing, you know the places to go. You know the places to do. That's right. Do those places. It's OTT Pod on anything that you can type into. Literally, you'll get us. And then, you know about Quest Fantastic already, but there's also Jen and the Film Critic out there as well with all the hit latest film opinions. We just put out an episode yesterday that doesn't mention Dune Part 2. That's how fucking up to date we are. That's how tight my editing turnaround is. Seen that prick twice since then. I'm Paul twice, but then.
And I'm Sarah sometimes here.
And remember, the one good thing about Ghostbusters Afterlife is that maybe, just maybe, the next one will feature more James Acaster and significantly less people who have died.